Hey, you want that to go?
Takeouts this morning. Sports contributor Ibrahim Abdelmateen is here in the studio. Good morning, Ibrahim.
Good morning.
And Louise Story from our partner in the New York Times, finance reporter for the New York Times. Good morning, Louise.
Good morning.
We begin with a takeout that involves you, Louise. So first of all, just as instability in the nation of Greece threatened the entire financial stability of the Eurozone, protesters heard last week, so do unstable territories in this nation of the United States of America threaten the United States.
Welcome to the Hotel California.
No one would compare Greece to California, Massachusetts, and New York, but your newspaper is actually doing that this morning, Louise. What's going on?
You know, and it's not just our newspaper and the story today. When I was writing about the Greece crisis breaking out and their debt load, one of the most common comments I got from readers was, what about our state? You know, people are reading in the local papers about all the problems. You know, you've got New Hampshire, where the state Supreme Court just ordered the state to take back $110 million from a medical malpractice insurance pool that it was trying to use for its budget. You've got Connecticut, who's trying to make up its own accounting rules, not even use standard accounting rules, so it can look better. This is happening all over, and there are some similarities with Greece. The states are commonly using derivatives that make their budgets look better than they are. You've had new politicians come in, for instance, the governor of New Jersey coming in saying things are worse than you thought they were. You had the state comptroller of Illinois, for instance, admit that the state is behind on $9 billion of its bills. So there do seem to be looming problems and similarities.
And let's follow the logic. The numbers are huge in places like New York and California. The accounting strategies are pretty squirrely if you look from state to state. The rating of the United States government is dependent upon investors seeing that the U.S. government either doesn't have to bail out these states, or if it does, it won't cause a problem. And in fact, the states are making that a difficult argument. If California defaults, the U.S. federal treasury takes a hit.
Right. And so one of the reasons that state bonds have not spiraled, because the difference with Greece is we haven't seen investors really react on these state bonds. So it seems like investors really believe the U.S. would bail the states out. But it's interesting if you compare the debt level of some of these states to what would be allowed in Europe. You know, in Europe, you have all these rules about what kind of debt you can have in the Eurozone. And here, if you look at Rhode Island, for instance, if you compare the size of Rhode Island's debt to its economy, it would not be allowed
really?
In the Eurozone.
It would be jettisoned from
right?
the Eurozone.
Right. Well, they would be in trouble. They'd be getting penalties. They'd be having to shape it up. And so in the U.S., you know, we don't have those sort of rules for the states, and there's this assumption that the federal government will bail them out. Already, the U.S. government is helping the states. You know, this Build America bond program.
Right.
The U.S. has been backing debt issued by the states to help them finance themselves.
It's actually a kind of a sort of a fine print stimulus package.
Right,
ways.
Right.
Louise Story, Wall Street and finance reporter for the New York Times, worried about New York, California, and Massachusetts bringing down the whole U.S. House of Cards. Thanks, Louise.
For our next takeout, let's talk sports with Ibrahim Abdelmateen. A lot of people are talking about the NCAA tournament, and we're going to talk about that in just a moment. But let's talk about another Final Four college basketball tournament that starts today. It's the NIT tournament. It's been going for 70 years, but it could be near its end.
Oh, no, it's not near its end. It's actually been
really?
Taken over by the NCAA. It has amazing attendance. It's really a premier sort of college basketball tournament. It's the same thing as if you're in college football where you play BCS, you get a top championship bowl game. And if you don't get a net, you get another bowl game. So this is another opportunity for teams to show success.
How do they pick the teams that go?
Essentially, teams that don't get into the NCAA tournament, but that still are in good conferences, that have good RPIs, which is like the index that determines the quality of their schedule and their play. So some of the teams in the tournament, in the Final Four, you have Dayton and URI, which are both from the Atlantic 10, which is a good conference. And then you have Mississippi State, who's from the SEC, and then you also have North Carolina, who's the ACC. So it has premier college basketball conferences in the Final Four.
And you don't think the NCAA got the NIT tournament so they could get rid of it?
No, I think they got it so they could continue making money off of it, frankly, because it still has amazing attendance. The games are held at local spots, and local arenas. So I think it keeps this sort of fervor around college basketball alive.
Okay, well, let's talk about NCAA tournament, but let's talk about the women real quick. We had some upsets among the women's tournament as well. One that is not an upset is UConn. They are, in their first three games of this tournament, they've won by a combined total of 148 points. In fact, I read a quote. They beat Iowa State. They not just beat Iowa State, they humiliated Iowa State. And the coach of Iowa State says, "I don't think I've had a whipping like that since I broke one of my mother's china pieces."
And next up for them is Florida State, who's making their first appearance in the Elite Eight. I don't envy Florida State at all right now for their situation.
It's not going to be very long there in the Elite Eight.
The thing for them is that they have a chance to play a rematch against Stanford. And Stanford's led by Jane Apple, who's an All-American center. But Stanford won an amazing buzzer beater against Xavier. Last second shot, drove Jeanette Poland drove the length of the court and scored the game-winning bucket. So really, it's a question. Can Stanford and UConn play another rematch? These are elite teams in women's college
basketball. A couple top seeds, Nebraska and Tennessee, both taken out in the NCAA tournament for women. So it's still going to be exciting. Basketball going on, even though everyone expects UConn
to roll.
The most
exciting foregone conclusion in basketball history.
But look for Baylor. Look for Baylor. They're a young team. They have a lot of freshmen. And we'll see. Maybe it'll be the greatest upset in history of women's college basketball.
Okay, let's talk about education here from both Louise and Ibrahim quickly. Where the question we're asking our listeners is, if we got a national curriculum, disregarding reading and math, what's the one class you think kids need to know?
They need financial literacy. In addition to math, people need to know interest rates, checkbooks.
Ibrahim?
Public speaking skills.
Oh, interesting.
That's a good one. Give us your answer at 8778MYTAKE or at our website, thetakeaway.org.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.